The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil here for the second hour of the show. Kelly Bidlin with me as well. We've got a couple of great guests coming up. Lou Finicaro to talk some UFC fight night in mere moments. We'll also have Paul Stone, who's in town, to bet some game of the years in college football. A couple of notable sportsbooks have dropped those within the last few days here in the college football landscape. We are also getting a couple of tweets here, mostly people commenting about my shirt choice today, and in particular, Jonathan Von Tobel, who is on Follow the Money today, saying he can see all of my chest hairs, to which Femi Abebefe has rightly pointed out that is the dress code here at Bar Canada. So thank you, Femi, for having my back. That's just how we roll here at Bar Canada.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Kelly's like, I have nothing else to add. That's all.
I was right there with you yesterday, but now I'm a little bit more buttoned up today. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Rob Moreno from our circuit control room has my back on this as well. Anyway, we'll also update you on round two of the Open Championship, continuing from Royal Trude in Scotland, but we don't want to waste any more time. Live on our progressive guest line, the outstanding contributor to VSiN on all things UFC, as well as About Business podcast, it is Lou Finicaro, who was listening to our last segment, Kelly. And Lou, we don't have to get into it in great detail, but you do have grievances on the schedule makers that you did want to at least share. But great to see you as always, sir, as you're doing your NFL prep, and excited to get into some UFC with you as well.
Happy to do it. Thanks so much for having me on, guys. No, the schedule makers have a tough job, no question about it. But to me, my biggest grievance is that the players are getting the back end of this thing. And who is getting set up perfectly is the Shield, and those that give money to the Shield, the networks, who want great games when they contract to have a Monday or Thursday night game. And all that has pressure, and that pressure comes down on players with lack of rest or quick turnarounds, et cetera, et cetera.
No question. I love how we got Lou fired up on our Skype line, and he was just like, Kelly, we got to talk about the schedule just immediately. But no, great stuff, Lou.
Lou, what's your favorite book you got behind you? It's quite a stack that's going on back
there. That is a good stack.
That book there is My View from the Corner from Angelo Dundee. I grew up, just idolizing Ali. And then I found out about Angelo Dundee, and he's really been, I don't know him, but he's been the mentor in the fight game for me since I was a little kid. And boy, a lot of the vernacular that I use and the slang that I use in the fight game come right out of that book.
It's wonderful. Nobody more locked in than Lou as far as weekly UFC betting, and we go to the Apex in Las Vegas this week for a fight night, which has a lot of tightly priced bouts here, Lou. The weigh-ins will come in shortly, in about an hour here today, but some things you've already kind of dipped your toes into the water on, at least for the main event of this fight night. It is the Virna Yandarova Amanda Lemos bout, and I have seen the dog Lemos take some action here, even though this is pretty tightly lined in general, down to about plus 110 consensus in the market there on Lemos. For people who are most intrigued, first off, in the main event of this fight night, what can you say about why the support is coming in for the dog here on Lemos, and what that bout will look like?
Well, it's a women's bout at 125 pounds. Both women are ranked and highly ranked. The winner of this goes right into contention for a championship shot. And they're both Brazilian athletes, both Brazilian fighters with a little different style. Yandarova, a little more premeditated, not as fluent striking on the feet, nor is she as defensively fluid against strikes on the feet. However, she's a savant Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. She wants to envelop you, push you against the fence, trip you, get you down on the mat, and then find a way to grab an appendage or a neck and choke you out or snap something if she can. On the other side, Lemos is a gal that has a little bit more UFC experience. She's been in with a more elite level of competition, and she's a little taller, a little bit longer, primarily a violent striker. Now, she can submit, and she can hold her own on the ground, but I don't think she wants to invite this fight to go down to the mat at Yandarova's strength. Rather, I think she wants to fight it at her forte, which is up on the feet at distance. And Lemos has profuse power. She's going to try and get Yandarova out of there early. if there's one Achilles to Lemos's game is that she, at 35 years old, has shown that she can tire at the end of fights. So if Jandiroba can weather this first three-round storm and find herself in this fight late, it could get very compelling. But I do lean to Lemos, who opened minus 135. There's been a little bit of money come in on her. I just like her experience and the fact that she's been in with a more developed and diverse, I should say, level of competition than has Jandiroba.
Yeah, best number you can find actually at Circa, right behind us here, Lou, plus 120 there on Lemos. Because of that breakdown and about the ability, you have a favorite in Jandiroba trying to keep the, you know, keep this bout kind of on the feet, so to speak. You're seeing this priced 2.5 rounds on the total over now. I'm seeing as high as minus 165 up to minus 170. Seems like a logical explanation based on what you laid out as to why that is the case.
A five-round fight here, and really with women's fights in a five-round fight, you're used to seeing 4.5. That 2.5 is relatively aggressive, and I think it speaks to Lemos' power.
No question. Now, that is the main event coming up again. Fight night this week from the Apex in Las Vegas as Lou Finicaro joins us on our progressive guest line. Follow him at Gamblue. Check out the Bout Business podcast. And you can also go to VSiN.com, his full write-up on all of the fights coming up right now at VSiN.com. As far as some other bouts that have drawn your interest here, we go to the featherweight, which will be 8 Eastern tomorrow night. A couple of fighters who've had some inconsistencies here. You get Sungwoon Choi going up against Steve Garcia. And this is one that has seen some action toward Garcia, the favorite. He's been bet up about 10 cents there in the market, Lou. And it's always fascinating to kind of try to get the breakdown when you have two fighters who have plenty of losses between the two of them and have struggled with that consistency there as they get set for that fight against each other tomorrow.
Yes, that's right. And Garcia has had the better recent run, meaning his last 3 years have been much more impressive. He's a Hispanic heritage. So, you know, the Mexican fighter, he's got a granite jaw. He doesn't begin to fight until he gets hit. He throws great straight jabs, but he has unbelievable power and he really has bad intention. And 80% of his wins, 80% have been via the finish, primarily striking. Sungwoo Choi comes in from South Korea. He's had to travel. He's also a long, tall striker. He's used to being the longer, taller striker. In this fight, he will not be. So that'll be an adjustment to him as well. He hasn't been overly active. He's been, in fact, somewhat inactive. And I think the inactivity, the travel, and the fact that he has to come in and compete against a killer in Garcia that's finished fights, Choi has also been finished previously in his career. And so I think that sets up relatively favorably for Garcia. And in the VSiN digital magazine, I used Garcia as a parlay play because I have an aversion to minus numbers. And I teamed him with Miranda Maverick, who I think we'll speak of here later in the segment. And she's a favorite, and that turns two favorites into a positive position.
Very nice. Now let's talk Maverick right now because she takes on Deanna Barbosa. And again, getting market support here was about $1.80 at open in Maverick, and she's now up to, I'm seeing minus 235, 240 there in the market, Lou. So certainly a fighter who is getting a lot of market support in that one.
Right. And we took this one with Maverick a week ago, knowing that her price was going to go up. And that was because she was originally scheduled to fight Tracy Cortez, who fought Rose Namajunas last week. And so Maverick's had a full camp. She trains in Denver at elevation, comes to Vegas ready to fight. And because Cortez had to go to the main event last week, they bring in young Barbosa. This is her second UFC fight. She travels in from Brazil on short notice to take a gal with a full camp. And Maverick will be giving away size and reach in this fight. But she's a tiger and a dynamo, unrelenting forward pressure wrestler. And she's had that full camp. And I think that wrestling will be kryptonite to the Brazilian jiu-jitsu game of Barbosa, who is just being asked to do an awful lot. These short notice fights, you endear yourself with the organization for future considerations, but it's a tough ask, and this is going to be one tough ask for Barbosa against Maverick.
Kelly is a former Missouri Tiger myself. I love it when we get the Tiger vernacular from Lou. It always makes me smile.
That's right.
We'll be on Maverick as a result of that. One more to break down here, Lou. This has been kind of all over the place as far as two-way action. Bruno Silva, Cody Durden, which is at 8:05 Eastern as part of this fight night here. I've seen this kind of all over the place. Lou, most books now have it close to a pick'em with the 2.5 heavily juiced to the over, minus about $2 there. What do you make of a very busy week of line movement on that particular bout?
Yeah, it really has been. Bruno Silva open, you know, minus 150, minus 160-ish. And he's a well-rounded fighter. Power in his hands, great Brazilian jiu-jitsu game. He can submit. But in this fight, he travels in. He's given away about 3 inches of height to Durden, reach to Durden. And Durden is a wrestler. I wouldn't say elite or world-class wrestler, but he's a very gifted wrestler who has cardio all day. So the size and the wrestling of Durden will be what attempts to dominate Bruno Silva in this fight. And Silva's got power in his hands, and he's got a great submission game. If there's a chink in Durden's armor, he has been submitted 3 times previous in his career. So he's going to have to watch out for that. But to me, this fight will be even going into the third round. And when the third round begins, that's where I believe Durden's not only his aggression, but his cardio. I think that's the foundation of this handicap for me, is the cardio for Durden and the wrestling pressure. I think that's his advantage.
You can see all the full write-ups from Lou on our website, VSiN.com. Check out his podcast as well, the Bout Business Podcast. Always great to see you, Lou. Be well, man.
Thanks so much, guys. Good luck, everybody.
Lou Finicaro with us on our Progressive Guest Line as we kick off hour number two here on A Numbers Game. When we come back, we'll go through our power ratings in the NFL, top five, bottom five for both Kelly and I when we return.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175, which saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to all of our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, data, betting systems, and analysis from our top handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all the special edition betting guides like the NFL guide, which is out now, as well as our college football guide, which is coming out soon. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Do not wait. Sign up before the end of July and you get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. Back here, hour number two of A Numbers Game. I'm Ben. He's Kelly here from the Shield of Bar Canada at the D. We're watching the Open Championship. It's a great day here to be a sports fan. You got the Hungarian Grand Prix. Free practice now underway. Shane Lowry in the clubhouse, 7 under par. He is your leader. And Daniel Brown, gotta say, have to be impressed, Kelly. Thought he would. He's really pulling off the Lee Westwood, the fellow Englishman, puffy vest in the cold here today. That's kind of giving me Lee Westwood vibes. But Brown only won over on his round after the 350-1 shot to be first round leader was 6 under yesterday. He's at 5 under par, and it seems like in the last hour there haven't been many birdies out there, but a lot of guys are at least stabilizing here, which pars feel like a very positive thing at this point. At this stage of the tournament, as the weather's gotten a little bit worse.
Yeah, this is very impressive by Daniel Brown to stay right there. And just saw from Data Golf a little while ago, plus seven, the projected cut line now by them.
Plus seven?
Seven over, yep.
Wow. Well, would not shock me the way this is going for guys further down the board. Rory McIlroy has just, it's been a wild start for him. McIlroy, who will be right on that cut line. He, I believe, is about to hit his 5th shot on a par 5 from the fescue. He's 8 over. Yikes. For the tournament, 1 over through 3. T111, and that is, it gives you an example of, for these guys not at the top of the leaderboard. I mean, it's just a struggle just to make par, but that's the other thing. I mean, our final groups don't tee off. I think it's like 4:16 p.m. local time in the U.K., which is at 4:27, excuse me. It's the final tee time. So we're not going to know till very, very late, and that's why there's still a lot of golf, a lot of poor conditions to be dealt with by a lot of these guys. Other guys we've been noticing here, Ludvig Aubert, 1 over through his first 5 holes today. He's at 5 over. right on the current cut line. Bryson DeChambeau even through 5 as well. Justin Thomas 8 over through 11. He's all the way down to 5 geez. Over. So, yeah.
JT.
I know.
What's the biggest surprise to you to the negative? Who? I guess who's the biggest surprise?
Biggest surprise to the negative, as convenient as it is to say McElroy, I mean, this is the...
That's what I was trying to decide if there's another answer to that.
It's like, that's the obvious one.
I think it's got to be Rory. Not that I was betting him or anything, but it's still got to be Rory for me.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a there's probably a lot of people are going to say what after I say this, but for how hot Aaron Rye has been recently.
Oh, yeah. Golf hardos will... They were on him. 6 over today. He's 4 over through 8.
Yikes.
You know, I guess in that same tone, I would say, even though the form hasn't been great, but you know, he's a guy who knows how to play.
You have those flipped. 4 over for the day, 6 over for the tournament.
Yes, 6 over for the tournament. 4 over through 8 on his round today. The way he started and the way he was in one of those late afternoon, early round waves, I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick, what a brutal round today. 7 over for Fitzpatrick, who was 1 under through round 1, and you figured he was going to be in a really optimal situation, but he loses, how about this, Kelly, minus 4.34 strokes on approach today. Right. He lost almost 6 strokes tee to green, did Fitzpatrick. I mean, that's hard to do, honestly. He's the worst of guys who finished Fitzpatrick by over a stroke, the worst approach player in the field.
Okay, here's going to be a fun sweat for me. Aaron Rye over Matt Fitzpatrick in a matchup that I have.
And they're both 6 over.
They're both 6 over.
Oh,
Aaron Rye's still on the course, which is probably not a good thing for me.
That's not great. You know, not as bad as – it was, what, the PGA – I forget which PGA. It was a few years ago. I had a it was a matchup that involved Cameron Champ. And it involved Thomas Peters, and I think I was fading Champ. Champ was in the clubhouse at like 15 over. He'd missed the cut.
Yeah.
Peters goes out and shoots like 81, goes 16 over, and I lose the match by 1.
Gosh.
And I was just like, you got to be freaking kidding me.
Oh, that's wild.
Anyway, Tiger Woods has finished. He's 6 over for the day, 14 over for the tournament. He will not be seeing the weekend. Will Tiger Woods. And I'd also say, yeah, Wyndham Clark in the bottom 5 here. Wyndham Clark, 16 over par, 9 over today. Wyndham has really fallen off as far as his form. We'll have some thoughts on that coming up as we wrap up the show. For right now, though, time to get into our power rankings. I'm excited to bring this back here, Kelly, as we fire up the open here, both top 5 and bottom 5 NFL power rankings here on our final day together on this show. Let's do it.
Plug it in.
Hey, it has added meaning today with the worldwide Microsoft outage.
Yeah, hopefully everybody's doing okay at home with that. We definitely hurried in here this morning and double-checked all our systems and everything because, man, I was talking to a couple other friends just in the broadcasting business around the world, and there was things happening with systems that they couldn't understand. I see it's affecting some local casinos around town here in Las Vegas as well.
Flights are a mess.
The Sphere, I can't tell whether they're making a joke out of it or if they actually had a problem, but they have like an error message up on the Sphere right now, I believe.
Funny.
So, yeah, problems everywhere. I know it's dealing with flights and 911 systems and everything around there. So, not much to laugh at when it comes to that stuff. So, hopefully everybody's out there doing okay,
sure,
especially
thing.
Those traveling.
Yeah, well, you were worried. Would the outage affect me? Would I be, you know, would my machinery be working today? But luckily, I was.
You did worry me a little bit. Ben always answers me. When Ben doesn't respond to a text message from me, it concerned me.
Yeah.
It concerns me a little bit.
Anyway,
and if you had Kelly solo today, oh boy, it would have been like full open play-by-play for 2 hours.
Friday, basically. Power rankings time. Then we'll start these. You know, top 5. I don't think there will be a lot to talk about in the top 5. I think the bottom 5 is going to be more interesting here, Kelly. But I did go Chiefs 1, shocker. Ravens 2 for me. I'm really high on the Ravens. I have them above the 49ers coming in with the Eagles 4. Dolphins, I guess, would be the surprise for me at 5. Not a team I was expecting to have there. Just going through the rosters, I mean. The offensive line and the front 7 are the only issues for Miami, but the strengths of their team, from secondary being top 5 to both running back and wide receiver being top 3 with the sort of personnel that they have, gives me the belief that, you know, with a schedule that is top 10 as far as easiest strength of schedule this year, relatively favorable here. While there are some concerns I have for them to the back half of the year, they check off all the boxes, Kelly, is that team that gets off to a fast start. Then it becomes, okay, what happens down the stretch? But at least to start off, to me, it is a team that Miami, while I don't have a ton of confidence in them, say, in the postseason, I do like them as a regular season team based on how the roster is constructed this year. And they did just narrowly round up my top 5, just ahead of the Detroit Lions this year for me.
Okay, I like it. I like it. That was, so Lions were your sixth team?
Lions were six.
That was because we usually, you know, when Gil and I, you do this through a season, it's usually top 10. So it is, right. it's always interesting to see what's that last team you left off, right, at any point. So
Bills just missed the cut for me as well. Bengals as well. Yeah, they were all bunched in there close.
Yeah, my top five, and this is, I'm just going to read them because we didn't get the graphic got screwed up a little bit here. My top five, Chiefs number one. I think, as you said, like this is, I think it's only a hot take at this point after last year. It's only a hot take if Chiefs aren't number one to me. I mean, with all the concerns that we had about that receiving core last year, and then it actually played out that way on the field, and they still won the Super Bowl. It's just amazing. So Chiefs won for me. I have the Philadelphia Eagles number two. I expect a massive rebound from this team this season from what the coaching staff that they've overhauled, with the coordinators that they've brought in. I do think there are not many running backs that I'm going to sit here and say I think make a big difference. I think Saquon Barkley is going to make a big difference. I think there's a lot of designs that Kellen Moore can do to make this offense even more explosive. We saw where their defense was hurt last year. Secondary was the major issue. That is really what they shored up in the draft and in the offseason. I really like what this Eagles team is going to be bringing. I put Eagles 2, 49ers 3. I think you want to tell me 49ers, you got above the Eagles, that's fine. I think those are the top two teams in the NFC for me. And then I go back to the AFC, and that's where I went. I went the AFC North teams we talked about yesterday. It is Bengals, and then it is Ravens for me. I have a division bet on the Bengals, so I got to put them above the Ravens. Ravens round out that top five. Six for me, and this was very tough to leave them out, is the Buffalo Bills, because I love Josh Allen. I think anytime you've got Josh Allen on the field, you are live to win a lot of games. But they would be my sixth team.
Okay, bottom five. This is where the debate gets a little bit more interesting. I thought, I kind of assumed New England would be further down, but they were actually the starting point of the bottom five here. New England 28 for me.
Stunned. I am stunned by
Cardinals 29, Broncos 30, and then Commanders 31, Giants 32, which is mostly roster-based. Like, I think the reason why for me is that New England still has enough pieces on defense.
Yeah.
It's a really good front seven, a really good secondary. Whereas, you know, Commanders graded out, you know, bottom half of the league in every single positional group for me, but there's also a huge caveat with them, which is you've got a really, really good head coach, Dan Quinn, who's a good defensive mind coming in. And who's to say Dan Quinn can't come in and turn all that around? It's just from the very start, that's why I have Washington so low. And that they completely fit the bill to me, Kelly, is this year's Houston, if, you know, a lot of things have to go right. But if you see any sorts of those expectations exceeded. And to me, the Giants, I was surprised at just how bad, when you look at bottom five O-line, bottom five wide receiver room, terrible quarterback situation, a bad running back group as well, now that you don't have Saquon Barkley anymore. Secondary, I would argue, the worst in the league. Front seven's the only way you can hang your hat on. I don't see that winning you any games this year. That's why the Giants are actually dead last for me, and that's one where you 10-1 to win, have the fewest wins this year. Tough schedule as well for the Giants. We'll talk the rest of our power rankings coming back in a little bit. Also, we'll get Paul Stone on to talk some games of the year in college football next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Into our final half hour here on A Numbers Game, live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. Super thrilled to get Paul Stone on here in a second. We're going to talk some mostly college football with Paul, but he's also a great golf bettor as well, Kelly. And, I hope Paul's card is going well.
I hope it's going better than mine.
Well, I was going to say, for us, it's been an adventure so far out there today. As the Open Championship, none of us had Daniel Brown in top five after the first round. Brown in the clubhouse, 5-under par. He does finish his round as he now is a 2 shots back of Shane Lowry, who's in the clubhouse at 7-under par. Justin Rose has dropped a shot down to 3-under. Rose with a 1-shot lead over three players, Billy Horschel, Dean Burmester, and the tournament pre-tournament favorite, Scottie Scheffler, who you did add this morning, Kelly, at 2-under par. That's the latest as it stands right now.
But Colin Morikawa top 10 keeps looking better and better, though, as the day goes
there.
On.
Morikawa, Colin, is
he's one over.
Finding his way. He's not out of it. I mean, that's T13 right now.
Yeah.
He's in the clubhouse. Very few red numbers out there today. So good on Colin Morikawa. Low round of the day. I mean, Billy Horschel, Jason Day, and Patrick Cantlay, all 3-under today. Pretty good. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
We'll welcome in Paul Stone right now. We'll see how Paul's card is going. We go on to our progressive guest line, professional handicapper, joining us. Great VSiN contributor over the years. Paul Stone joins us right now, who is in town, ready to make some game of the year bets, some signups for contests. Paul, first off, how is your Open Championship card going on what's been a crazy windswept first couple of days there at Royal Troon?
Yeah, I tell you, good to be on with you guys, first of all. You know, there's still work to be done to see who makes the cut, but I'm mostly a matchups guy. And so you got to go all 4 days. There's a lot of ups and downs on these matchups, but right now, not all that great. You know, I'm hoping I've got 5 matchups and I'd love to win 3 of them, but still a long way to go. It's just really interesting looking at this leaderboard. I mean, Justin Rose, although he's played well in the Open Championship before, his current form, he's not been playing well lately. Billy Horschel's a guy who's well known for his lack of success in the major championships, not just the Open Championship, but all the majors. Horschel has struggled, and he's up on the on the top 5 or so. So really, really interesting tournament. There's a lot of attrition out there. A lot of wind, and I think it's going to be a great golf tournament, great finish on the weekend.
Yeah, no question. Apologies to a couple guys who also were 3 under, but way down the board. Jorge Campillo was 9 over, goes 8, because your classic 80-68, Kelly, because why not 6 over tournament?
Yeah,
and then Gary Woodland, one of Kelly's favorites, week in, week out. 3 under today to get to 2 over. Gary Woodland tied for 22nd. So a lot of those, if you bet top 20s, you'd like to at least be I'd say probably no worse than 3 over right now to feel like you got a shot there going into the weekend. We are mostly here, though, to talk about some college football with Paul Stone. You were out here. There are games of the year to be bet. First off, on the ecosystem with that, you know, some books were posting games of the year as early as late January, Paul. A couple in Vegas, notably South Point, will be releasing their games of the year today. Saw Westgate release theirs a few days ago and had a number of games that had not been priced anywhere in the market. What have you noticed as far as just the tightness within those respective lines now that that ecosystem has grown so much and so many people, you've been one of the OGs, but so many new people now are into the game of the year markets and betting them really, really heavily?
Yeah, I mean, it's just you have the aggressive operators, first of all, which is what I like. I think FanDuel, we were talking before we came on, I think within 2 or 3 weeks of the end of the previous season in late January, they posted like 10 games of the year, Texas, Michigan, Texas, Oklahoma, those kind of games. So really aggressive to get those games out there. And I'd bet probably close to 50 games by early May. So I've done most of my work. Most of what I do in the off season is not so much any of the, you know, the Heisman's not really my cup of tea. I don't really bet the national championship. Don't bet a whole lot of regular season win totals, but bet a lot of games of the year. And with these aggressive operators, you know, I get out there early and often and try to get the best number. That's what it's all about, is getting a number better today than you're going to be able to get the week of the game. When everybody comes in a little bit later and starts posting their games of the year, there's usually not a whole lot of, a lot of it's copy and paste. They're not putting up, wildly different numbers. So I just don't do a whole lot of work. It'll be interesting to see how many games I take today at South Point, but I wouldn't anticipate more than 4 or 5.
Gotcha. It was also fascinating, too, is just to see when these games are up for so long, how the markets tend to adjust over time. And we have a list of some of the bets that you have already made here, Paul. I was just pulling up one that I think is fascinating because Florida's gotten more talk to me schedule-wise than anybody. It's been widely perceived to be the toughest schedule maybe in college football history with what Florida has this year. They have a number of interesting spots. You took them in one game of the year against Texas, and it's just kind of that classic case of, you know, just because a team has a really tough schedule should not totally discount the talent that they have. And by all accounts, Florida has a really talented roster. It's just that schedule is going to be a gauntlet. So how did you approach trying to pick off some of the individual Florida games this year, which you obviously did one of them here, Florida catching 18 against Texas on November the 9th?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at this game individually, I mean, you hit it, nail on the head as far as their schedule. I mean, it's a murderer's row schedule, the consensus most difficult schedule in the nation, and Texas is certainly a piece of that. But should the Longhorns be laying 18 points to a pretty good Florida team the second Saturday in November, and that tends to be kind of the point in the season when some teams tend to excel, sometimes let their foot off the gas a little bit. I mean, looking at the Longhorns last year, first couple weeks in November, they had narrow 3-point victories, I think, against both Kansas State and TCU. A few weeks before that at Houston, they went 31-24, thanks in part to a favorable spot that Houston fans probably still don't care to discuss. But they were a 23.5-point favorite in that game. So the Longhorns, they were fortunate to make the playoff last year. they're not invincible. It just seems a little bit too high. So I like the Gators there plus the points. Talking about Florida, you do have to be concerned when you get later in the year. There's a lot of speculation about Billy Napier being on the hot seat. And, you know, he could really be on the hot seat by November 9th. And, you know, might not even be their coach. That wouldn't be, out of the realm of possibility. So you have to worry about those things. And I actually played against Florida in an earlier game. I took Central Florida plus six there at Circa over Florida there earlier in the season. So Florida is going to be an interesting watch. They do have some talent, but they do have such a difficult schedule.
And no question on that as Paul Stone joins us to break down some college football games of the year. I remember when you were in town and we were talking, you brought up one of these games that you bet it was at 10. It has moved a little bit here in the market. A lot of people are intrigued, at least the situational spot, for a very rarely seen Alabama trip to Camp Randall in Madison. Alabama at Wisconsin early in the year, third week of the season. You got that at 10. It's down to 8.5 here, Paul. What did you see in this spot specifically as to why you see the Badgers keeping this thing within a one-score game?
Well, first of all, Alabama, it's going to be Kalen DeBoer's first road game as Alabama's head coach. And he's been around a while. So, you know, it's not his first rodeo, but Alabama only 5-9 the last 3 years is an away favorite. And then you've got this Wisconsin team. They're not home underdog at Camp Randall very often, only twice in the last 10 years. Actually, one of those times was last year against Ohio State. They were catching 14.5. Actually got the cover, only losing by 14. Wisconsin's got a new quarterback in Tyler Van Dyke, who transfers over from Miami. I just expected this line to be closer to 7. The 10 is still available. I believe it's at Westgate, if I'm not mistaken, who put their games of the year up a couple of weeks ago. So you can still find, if you shop around, you can
sure
find
thing.
Wisconsin plus 10. I certainly like the 10 points, if you can find that with the Badgers over Alabama.
One more here, Paul, before we let you go. This was a game that saw Colorado about a 3-touchdown favorite. Should have lost last year in the rivalry game against Colorado State. This one now priced not as aggressively as it was a year ago, but you can get a 7.5 here with the Colorado State Rams. And that is a bet that you were on here looking to take the dog in that rematch of one of the craziest games in the college football season from 2023.
Yeah, just a great game last year. And you look at this season's Rocky Mountain Showdown. This is the first time that these rivals have played in Fort Collins since 1996. So the last 24 meetings, none of those have been played on Colorado State's home field. They're going to be really excited to get Coach Prime and the Buffaloes there in Fort Collins. You look at the scheduling spot. Colorado is going to be off a road trip to Nebraska. They're going to have their first ever Big 12 game at home against Baylor waiting on deck. And then Colorado State on the flip side, they host FCS Northern Colorado the week before. They'll only play UTEP the next week. So a real good scheduling dynamic there for Colorado State. They led that game last year for most of the year, led 28-17 midway through the fourth quarter. Colorado comes storming back. Forces overtime. I think they won the game in double overtime, 42-34. But Colorado State can throw the ball. That's Colorado's vulnerability, defense, period. But especially in the back of that defense, Colorado State threw for 397 yards last year. I expect something similar this year. They've got a great wide receiver in Torrey Horton, had 16 catches for 133 yards last year. So I like Colorado State plus the points.
Good stuff. Thank you as always, Paul. Great to catch up with you. I'm sure we will be seeing you in person here soon. Thanks as always.
Good deal. Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Final segment for us coming up, one baseball bet for me, and then we'll finish up our NFL talk on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on VSiN.com, check out Steve Mackinnon's best bets for college football win totals, as well as our NBA best bets on season win totals out right now from our Zach Cohen. And in case you missed our spot with Lou Finicaro, best bets on the UFC fight night coming up in Vegas tomorrow night, as well as exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides, all optimized for mobile and available at VSiN.com. We are back for the final time here on A Numbers Game with Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. Kelly and I were just they're showing the graphic of the actual size of the postage stamp there at Royal Truitt in relation to some of the standard PGA greens, some of the greens at St. Andrews, and you're just going, how can any mortal hit that thing?
It's basically a half court of basketball, an NBA half court. It's about the size.
I mean, it's easy because there's no wind. I mean, oh, wait. No, there is wind. I got my wires crossed.
I would kill to grab a 12-pack of beer and go out there for like an hour and a half with you, Ben, and just try. Just see what we could do with that. It would be ugly.
Yeah. As somebody who...
And all I'm talking is tee shots because I'm not playing out of those damn pot bunkers right next to it. That would take forever.
As somebody... I hit with a super high ball flight, and so I just... I have like if I ever planned, which obviously we loved, you know, that's kind of a bucket list trip. You get like a Scotland, Ireland golf trip going, but the terror I would have when I'm like, I know every ball I hit is just going to go straight up in the air. And then if I'm into the wind, right back at me, I don't know how to hit the stinger. Like, what am I supposed to do out here? Like, I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way.
But that's why it's something we discuss on Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast. It's something we discuss from time to time. But probably not enough. Like, the ball flight is huge, but it is a very difficult thing to, in my opinion, to handicap somewhat, because a lot of some guys can change their shot shapes, right? And other guys really can't. Other guys, it's just kind of how they hit the ball.
Phil Mickelson was the most notable of this, who always lamented his potential ability because of his high ball flight.
Right.
He goes out and wins an Open Championship and came damn near close at Royal Truitt, losing by three to Henrik Stenson, who was in a matchup that any other year Phil probably wins that tournament going away were it not for how great Stenson was.
And then
that's a great example.
We talked earlier, Joaquin Niemann, a very low ball flight. There were some guys that were looking at him this week because of that. And I had to ask you off the air, what's one more than a quadruple bogey?
The quintuple bogey.
The quintuple. Waco just hit, yeah.
At the park. What happened? Not Niemann.
I don't know. I looked up. I was like, whoa, he's about to go from one under to four over.
So he went bunker to bunker to bunker to bunker. That's not what you want, but it can happen.
Say that again. Bunker to bunker to bunker to bunker? Was that four
there
bunkers?
Were four, I think it was double. It was two shots apiece in two different bunkers.
Oh,
so, like, he left the first one in. Then I think he had to go out. Then I think either he shanked, presumably, or he had to go out sideways, went to the other bunker on that par three, then left that one in. So it was four total bunker shots.
Good for these guys. I mean, I guess he's still, in theory, still, like, you know, in contention at least to make the cut. And then,
he's four
know,
over, yeah.
I mean, he could make some good money still. Some of these guys that are, like, 10 over par, if I'm getting stuck in one of those pot bunkers, like, after shot one or two, like, I'm just picking up my ball and throwing it out of the fairway and be like, penalize me, whatever you need to do.
What was it, the Phil one from a few years ago where the ball, he just went ahead and hit his moving ball in the green, which got a lot of old men frustrated, to say the least.
What was that, in the PGA?
Yeah.
Was it a major, right?
It was a major, yeah. And it was not going well for Phil.
Yes, I would probably do that.
You just John Daly it and withdraw again after round one of a major, which John Daly did again after yesterday. See, because for me, it's like, oh, you know, if you're so I'm like an 11 handicap, so it's like, oh, well, I can't count more than a, you know, triple anyway, so I can just pick up. I'm good. You can't really do that in major golf. It's not exactly. Alas, some final thoughts here. Baseball, it gets back underway today. Exciting, because we haven't had daily baseball now in 5 days. I just had one play today, and it's the market has really been anti-Dodgers over the last week. But I would argue, Kelly, there's no team who got the all-strike at a better time than the L.A. Dodgers, having gotten walked off back-to-back games, two of their three against the Detroit Tigers going into the break. You talk about limping. I mean, it was limping with some help from the training staff to get to the All-Star break for the Dodgers. But they open up an interleague series at home tonight against the Boston Red Sox. I thought the opening price was fair. Dodgers minus 140. Market disagreed. This is down to minus 118 at multiple books, and that is a buy price for me. This is kind of the perfect reset for L.A. And honestly, their most consistent starting pitcher has been Gavin Stone. Has really, really good numbers, and that's despite getting shelled his last outing before the All-Star break. I like Stone against Nick Pivetta today, even though, Pivetta has, you know, worse on the surface numbers but better peripheral advanced stats, yet the Dodger lineup certainly has the edge here despite all but how good Boston, how they have overachieved pre-All-Star break. It just seems like market's getting a little bit aggressive here on that move toward the Dodgers today. They are home. Sometimes the situational handicap element of this fresh out of the All-Star break not being really factored in here. And I think a lot of bettors are just saying, well, we're going to keep betting against the Dodgers and getting underdog prices as long as we're able to. And I don't see that lasting forever, to say the least.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's always fascinating to me. There's only a few teams out there. Dodgers, one of them, though. When you start hearing things like market consistently moving against them, like that is pretty shocking thing to hear.
Like 20-25 cents a game. I get it when they're $2 road favorites,
right.
And they're playing terrible baseball. But this is different. This is kind of a prove it series against Boston, who's been a good team. But expectations now to just another stratosphere here for the Red Sox. That's my one play for today, -118 on Gavin Stone and the LA Dodgers over Nick Pivetta and the Boston Red Sox. We'll just finish up here. Some thoughts, Kelly, on the NFL here as we wrap up the show today. We're doing our power rankings. We did not get to your bottom five. I also want to let into that right now. But I think the most shocking thing when I did my own numbers, and again, this is just going into where the positional rankings really, really high still on the Patriots defense, but I actually did not have New England number 32. I'm assuming a lot of people will. They are favored lose the most games. So I think that was more than anything for me. The shocker there, Patriots 28, Cardinals 29, Broncos 30, Commanders 31, Giants 32. And look, Giants, 10-1 worst record. Those alt. Now, look, the unders and alt-unders have been pounded. That's a bet you're on, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're breaking any new ground by saying, oh, boy, the Giants are terrible. But even when I did the deep dive on the rosters, even knowing how many respected bettors were on the Giants under, I didn't think it would be this bad. Is kind of my takeaway on the Giants, and it looks really, really ugly across the board.
Yeah, and what's kind of funny is after looking at yours and looking at mine again, I should probably even move the Giants a little further down. But yes, I did have Patriots as the worst team in the NFL this year, and I have bet them to have the most regular season losses or fewest wins, however you want to say that. I have bet that. And then 31 for me is the Denver Broncos, yeah. I think, where there's – we kind of hinted at it earlier when we were talking AFC West, where it's okay, Chargers, we think there's a lot of questions about, but they're still the second-best team in the division to me. But it's really because of what you're seeing if you're watching at home, on your screen. And that's, look, I think the Raiders are a bottom five team or at least flirting in that territory. I could be wrong on them. I'm not going to sit here and say that I've got them completely figured out when nobody else does. But, I think there's a chance – that train gets off the tracks real quick with Las Vegas and Devontae Adams. I mean, I think it's criminal that he's even still stuck on this team. We should have certain exceptions for when a guy like that wants to come play with a team to play with one of his best friends. It makes a lot of sense. And then when that guy leaves a year later, man, Devontae Adams, that good of a wide receiver on this bad of a team,
can he just be donated back to the Packers?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Just help
as a Packer
out.
Fan. Yeah, you would like that. They're 28 for me. I had the Giants
26 for me. The Raiders. I had Raiders 26, Carolina 27. So those were very, very close to my bottom five.
I was going to ask you about Carolina. So yeah, I did. So Raiders 28, Giants 29 for me. Although I think you could, I think these three teams between the Raiders and the Patriots, I could put in any order and it would be fine for me. I went Giants 29, Panthers 30, Broncos 31, and the Patriots 32. The Panthers, I wanted to ask you where they were at in yours, because you've heard differing opinions on this team from respected bettors. I mean, I know there's some groups out there that like this team over their win total, even like them in possible contention for that division. I think the roster has gotten overall a little bit better from last year, but man, I think there's, this might be overreacting to one season, Ben, but I'm not really worried about C.J. Stroud taking a step back. And I'm not saying Bryce Young can't take a big step forward, but, man, I'm going to have to see it first before I really start believing in what this team can do offensively. So until I see that, I think they're going to be right in this bottom five group for me. And Broncos, a little bit the same thing, right? I mean, that team has just been completely dysfunctional since Sean Payton's got there. Can Bo Nix be a big addition for that team? Maybe. I don't see them playing all that much better than where Russell Wilson was there last year. And that's another one that it just might take some time, but I think they're going to be pretty bad this year. So 31 for them.
We thought the defense too would be what carried them. We found out very quickly the defense would not be what would carry Denver last year, and I don't really see much improvement on that.
Me either.
I have them a bottom five front seven, bottom 10 secondary. And it would be a lot worse if you didn't have an outstanding, arguably the best cover corner in the league right now in Patrick Surtain.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a lot worse there for Denver, and they are one of the two teams, Denver and San Francisco, that just got the shaft from the schedule makers more so than anybody in the NFL this year. Great stuff hanging with you, man, though. I'll see you Sunday on Live Bet Sunday. We will be crowning an open champion as we well, probably have already done that as we hit the air, but still. Yeah, excited for it, man.
If you liked 2 hours of us, check us out for four hours on Sunday.
We've done all that we can do. If you're listening on radio, Gojo and Golic is next. If you're watching on VSiN, tune in to Best Bets right after this.